Welcome, listeners, to the third season of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and your podcast host. Tune in and join me as I chat with authors writing cozy and traditional mysteries. You won't find explicit violence, sex, or gore. You will find intricate plots, engaging characters, and brilliant writing. Thanks for listening. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. Lynn Chandler Willis, author of the Ava Logan Mysteries, joins me in the corner today to chat about Tell Me You Love Me, the third in the series. Welcome, Lynn.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Thank you. Now, Tell Me You Love Me is the third mystery in the Ava Logan series. So what's Ava up to this time around?
This time she is delving into the past of not only her own past, but the character of Mary McCarter, who is introduced in book two. It's her past. A lot of it is set in the Vietnam War era, and that whole culture of being a teenager in the 60s comes into play in this. So Ava is investigating how it starts is she's investigating a set of bones that a beagle has dug up on some property. And of course, Sheriff Gratian Ridge comes in to help identify the bones, and Ava just takes it upon herself to try to find out who the bones belong to and the story there.
Did any real life John Doe cases inspire Tell Me You Love Me?
Not necessarily. I was just thinking that, well, okay, let me back up. Yes. But it's not what you would think. The little beagle in Tell Me You Love Me's name is Tucker. And I used to take my dog, Finn, who is in all three books. She used to go, I would take her every Saturday and Sunday morning to local dog park. And one of her best friends there was a little beagle named Tucker. And he was just mischievous and into everything. And I said, you know what, I'm gonna have a Tucker beagle in one of my books. And sure enough, it just played out that my grandfather hunted with beagles. He hunted rabbit with beagles, and he had at one time he had 12 beagles, and I'll never forget all the baying and the howling. But he named every one of them Drum, D-R-U-M. We could not figure out why he named all of them the same name. And he said, so, you know, he didn't have to remember each one of them's name. They were all named the same name.
Will they all answer him at the same time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with the bays and the beagle howl, you know. So, that's kind of where that came from, was that I was thinking of my grandfather and how he used to hunt with these beagles, and then little Tucker, that he was not a hunter, he was a player, and he was the cutest thing. So I dug up some bones and we went with it.
So it was inspired by a real life dog.
Yes.
Now, your mysteries are set in Jackson Creek, North Carolina, which is a town in either Appalachia or Appalachia. I've heard the name pronounced both ways. The dictionaries list both pronunciations. I've heard some people comparing those who say Appalachia to imperialist. I've heard others calling those who say Appalachia show-offs, and I've heard still others claiming that how you pronounce it depends on whether you're from the southern half or the northern half of the region. So how do you pronounce it?
I pronounce it Appalachia, the latch.
Latch.
Yeah, that's how I pronounce it.
Do you have any strong feelings about Appalachia?
No, not really. I think Appalachia is such a diverse culture, from New York all the way down to Alabama. You're going to get the variety of culture and pronunciations. You're going to get different lingos, different language. There's a lot of Irish and Scotch-Irish in the North Carolina Appalachia area. And so you get a lot of their cadence also, where on up into West Virginia and Pennsylvania, it's a lot of Dutch ancestry. And so the language and the accents are totally different up there.
Okay, so now you've touched on how the region, which actually covers something like 200,000 square miles or a little more, and stretches from New York to Mississippi, you've touched on how that's diverse, but what about it also kind of makes it a unique culture?
To me, it is the, I concentrate a lot on, well, mainly on the southern Appalachia area, which is some of West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina, Virginia, or southeastern Virginia, Georgia. Because it's just that area that, of course, back in the 60s with Kennedy and Johnson's war on poverty, they brought the whole region into the spotlight and the media focus. And there's so much wrong with the perception of Appalachia. And that was one of my reasons for choosing that area, is because not everybody from that area is a toothless, barefoot, pregnant, dirty-faced woman standing over a cook stove. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. If that's the life you choose, then we should all embrace it for that person. But it's not all that. There are highly educated people from Appalachia. The area is so rich in culture and tradition. That's what appeals to me.
And do you see the setting as sort of a character in your story?
It is. The setting is a secondary character to me. And that's why I choose locations that are as powerful and as strong as the characters themselves. In my second novel, not the Ava Logan series, but in Wink of an Eye, which was published through St. Martin's, I set that book in Wink, Texas, which is a tiny, tiny little town in West Texas. And nobody's ever heard of it unless you're from Wink, but it was the area itself became as important as the main character. So setting to me is of the utmost importance.
And another element that's important in your story is the weather. So do you also see the weather as sort of a character in Tell Me You Love Me?
Right. In Tell Me You Love Me, it is set in the winter. So, of course, winter in Appalachia, especially, well, in all of Appalachia, but in the North Carolina mountains, it's just horrible. It's deadly. High winds, you know, feet and feet of snow. Of course, you're in Chicago, so.
It's not the mountains, though. So the snow in the city is a little different than snow in the mountains.
Well, in where this is set, it's, you know, temperatures drop down to zero, and it's a lot of snow, And then in book one, in Tell Me No Lies, the season is the fall, where you've got, of course, autumn in the North Carolina mountains is just absolutely gorgeous, and it's a tourist destination because of the changing of the leaves. So I wanted to get that in there. And then in Tell Me No Secrets, book two, we're in the dead heat of summer. So each season in North Carolina is so varied that that season can become a character unto itself.
And speaking of characters, your main character, Ava Logan, publishes a small town newspaper, and you used to own a small town newspaper. What was that like?
Much like Ava Logan. It was, oh, I loved it. I did it for 13 years, and we had a circulation of 10,000, totally ad supported, and we're talking mom and pop advertisers. I had no national accounts, so these were people that really supported the paper and supported me in publishing the paper. But we had politics, we had a town council, and so we had all the bickering going on between council members and neighbor, battling neighbor over a zoning issue. And so all of that just magnifies. So we had a, I mean, I had a lot of sources in there, but it's also the avenue that all your little churches, all your daycare centers, all your nonprofits and 4-H clubs and so forth, they come to you to announce, their event coming up. And every September and October, I had so many pumpkin festivals, that were announced rather than doing it individually. I just used to put it in one long column. This church is doing it, on this date, this church that day, this then, it got to be a joke about the pumpkin festivals.
Now, you describe one of the characters in your books as a granny witch. So, what's a granny witch?
Mary McCarter, she's one of my favorite characters. A granny witch is a person from Appalachia that knows the culture. They, back in early times, when doctors were sparse and it took a lot of effort to even get to a doctor or to a hospital. A lot of villages and the valleys and the hollers, the residents relied on granny women or granny witches who treated medical issues with herbs, with their own concoctions from plants. A lot of medicinal herbs and plants and using stuff like that along with various prayer. Some people considered it part of witchcraft. Other people considered it part of just a conjuring and healing. They were usually also the midwives in that area.
Now, you deal with some serious themes in Tell Me You Love Me, like domestic violence, opioids, unwed mothers in an era when that wasn't acceptable, regional stereotypes, poverty. So how do you handle such heavy themes without letting your story cross the line into noir?
I try to approach the theme or the situation as honestly as I can. And yes, single moms in the 1960s were really looked down upon. I know a lot of I grew up in the 60s, but I wasn't a teenager, but I knew teenagers who were suddenly sent away to visit their aunt, you know, when in another state somewhere. And then they would come back months later and no baby, you know, and so the baby was put up for adoption. So I saw a lot of that, and it is a heavy issue, but it's a real issue. And I try to look at it as it's not something that absolutely has to be told. It's not earth shattering, but it is a situation that does and did happen.
Now, moving away from the Abel Logan mysteries for a moment, you've also put together an anthology titled Writers Crushing COVID-19. Can you tell us a little about that?
That my local writers group, Piedmont Authors Network, or PAN for short, we had just started off in January as a nonprofit. We just, you know, a group of writers that met at the coffee shop and thought, well, let's really do something with this group and invite others to join us. We can do programs or workshops or what have you, because there's a lot of writers out there. And you yourself know, we're not the most extroverted people. So, it sometimes you have to pull us into situations and then once we get in with other writers, we become very extroverted, and it's like, you know, oh, we found a family. So what we wanted to do was start this organization and open it up to writers of all calibers, whether you were not published yet, whether you had a manuscript ready, whether you were struggling with a manuscript, or whether you were traditional or indie published. We've got a little bit of everything, you know, within our board members. I'm traditionally published. A couple are self-published. One's not published yet. One just signed a book contract, her first book contract with Level Best, Level Books. So we got together and said, okay, you know, we're going to plan a big event that's going to be our fundraiser for the end of the year. And we contacted a well-known author to do the event for us. Well, then the pandemic came along and we were like, let's put it on hold. And, you know, it just came about that the longer this virus is hanging on, the more things started getting canceled. And so we wanted to do something else to kind of get our group out there and to help, help where it was needed. Musicians, artists, filmmakers, everybody that could in the creative field was donating something to the cause. And, you know, you saw so many concerts that musical artists were giving, films that were Hamilton on Disney. You know, Disney went ahead and released that on Disney Plus rather than releasing it in a theater. All of this, made us start thinking, what can we do? And so we tossed around the idea of an anthology. And then I have certain contacts. One of our board members, Lawrence Kelcher, he has contacts. And so we just shot out emails and said, hey, would you like to contribute a story? And we were blown away by the response. We have got 35 of the best authors and the best stories and essays that I am so proud of this anthology, and the way that it came together is something that every author in it can be very proud of.
And can you tell us a little about the charity that the proceeds benefit?
Yes. Proceeds are going to the Book Industry Charitable Foundation, And 90% of the proceeds will go to that. The other 10% is just for administrative and printing costs, because we do have print copies. We are doing, what are we doing? We're doing virtual readings through Crowdcast. I'm sure you've seen the really popular Noir at the Bar.
Yes.
Those, we're kind of patterned after those. Sean Riley Simmons and Adam Mayer has volunteered to help us get those going and get them organized. So we're really looking forward to that. And, you know, hopefully we'll have that buy link attached so people can hear a story and say, oh, I really like that, and buy. And the money will go straight to the Book Industry Charitable Foundation.
And so what's next for you after, I mean, you've got Ava Logan and the anthology. Are you working on anything else now?
I am working on a crime novel. It's set in Appalachia, but I just can't leave there. And it is about a death doula. Now, I didn't know these people existed until about 2 years ago. My cousin actually was going through a last battle with lung cancer. And we talked a lot during the last week or so that she was alive. And she said something, you know, about, I want you to dedicate a book to me. And so I said, sure, you know, I will. And I got to thinking about this, and I was really fascinated by the hospice workers. And I had a friend of mine was a birth doula, and she had just got her license as a birth doula. And I'm just a country girl. I didn't know what doula was. And so I Googled what it was, and there is a birth doula and a death doula. And the birth doula kind of transitions you in, and the death doula transitions you out. And so I just became so fascinated with that whole aspect. And in this story that I'm working on now, and I'm up to 50,000 words, yay. So I'm way over that, you know, halfway point. The death doula is sitting with a terminally ill older woman, and her family is involved in a crime. So that's where the crime comes into. But the death doula is also a former FBI agent. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. So I've got that, and I've got, I'm collaborating on two different cozy projects with a good friend of mine. So we're writing three books at one time.
Wow, that's impressive.
Right.
Plus working, that's doubly impressive. And working at your day job, writing is work, but
right,
so
right.
You basically have two jobs going on.
Exactly. I leave the office, so to say, where I actually do the day job, and I just cannot work in there. You know, so I keep my laptop at the kitchen table, and that's where I write at.
Yes, I'm convinced some of the best books have been written at kitchen and dining room tables.
Right, exactly.
And speaking of best books, where can readers buy a copy of Tell Me You Love Me?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Where can readers buy a copy of Tell Me You Love Me?
It is available, of course, on Amazon and most major book sellers, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Kobo. Just depends on the format, but it is available on Amazon.
And Writers Crushing COVID-19, is that available just an ebook right now, or are the print copies available as well?
Well, I am so glad you asked that. The print copy was actually uploaded last night. So print is available. We will have the official launch of the book August 1st. But so it is available in digital and print on Amazon. And there is also my Facebook page. I have links on there for the Kobo, Smashwords, and other retailers.
And is Facebook the best place for readers to connect with you?
Yes, honestly, it is. I'm not very good at Twitter because I'm not very good at it. I don't understand the whole reason behind it, I guess. I don't know. So it's my least active social media. I am very active on Facebook, so that's a wonderful place to connect with me, or my website, which is lynnchandlerwillis.com.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining me today, Lynn.
Thank you for having me.
My guest today has been Lynn Chandler Willis, author of Tell Me You Love Me, the third Ava Logan mystery. I'm Alexia Gordon, your host. You've been listening to The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Until next time, goodbye. Thanks, listeners, for joining me for another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating or review wherever you listened. Follow the podcast on social media. I'm on Facebook as The Cozy Corner Podcast and Twitter and Instagram as podcast_cozy. Now you can support me on Patreon. Become a patron for as little as $3 a month and get a shout out on an episode of The Cozy Corner. Support at higher levels gains access to patron-only posts, thank you gifts, and giveaways. Sign up at www.patreon.com/authoralexiagordon. Thank you for your support, and thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.